Everybody jump on the floor. Guys, I'm riding on the floor.
Collective CIUT 89.5 FM. We're heard every Saturday from 3 to 5. From 3 to 4, we normally engage in roundtable discussions. We talk about important issues such as social justice, decolonization, resistance culture, identity, and all those good things. And then from 4 to 5, we bring you music to move you. I am Jams. Joining me in studio, my co-host,
Mally, a.k.a. DocuVixen.
And Adnan Hussein, hello.
Hello. Big shout out to Adrian, who is unable to join us today, and Kemba King will be along shortly. So we're the Vibe Collective. As I said, we're heard every Saturday. And this is the Roundtable Talk Hour. And today we have in studio with us a couple of guests to talk about a really exciting event. We have Eileen Sova, artist, activist, creator, organizer, extraordinaire, and we're really happy to have you here today. You're one of the founders of the Feminist Arts Conference. Welcome to the Vibe Collective.
Thank you.
And joining Eileen, we have Adili, and you are the youth coordinator for the Feminist Arts Conference.
That's correct.
So, welcome to the Vibe Collective.
Thank you.
And the Feminist Arts Art Conference is taking place in a couple of weeks at the Foundry, and according to your press release, Toronto artists organize a feminist art conference to address the recent backlash against women's equality. Do you want to talk a little bit about what led to the organizing of this event?
I think I can speak for a lot of feminist women that 2012 was a very difficult year. Not only what was happening in the States, but happening in Canada, there's been kind of a rollback of women's rights. We had a debate in Parliament again about abortion, access to abortion. We had Stephen Harper withdrawing support from Sisters in Spirit organization. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of issues around Aboriginal women's rights and missing and murdered Aboriginal women. And the discourse that was happening in the Republican Party during the election obviously seeps into our consciousness here, particularly around rape, the language around rape, the language around equality and women's role in government and society. And those discussions ended up happening here in Canada as well. And it was just infuriating to see those things and be kind of isolated and not have a feminist community to discuss them with. So I thought, it's time to get organized. And because I'm an artist, that's the avenue that I wanted to take, is to bring artists together to discuss this, these recent backlashes, and to start getting organized and being intelligent and sophisticated and starting to discuss those things through our artistic forms, which is really important. And then maybe, like, my hope is that there'll be a domino effect from this conference. People will meet each other. There'll be cross collaborations within disciplines. And, we're ready to face what's coming.
It sounds really, really exciting. I know I'm actually really honored to get to be a part of it. And do you want to talk about what the day will look like? Because you've got quite a lot happening.
Yeah, it's going to be a feminist explosion of creativity. And so when we get there, there'll be visual art on the walls, and there'll also be a quilting bee happening by an artist named Brett Gable, who's a student from OCAD University. And the attendees will be able to walk around the foundry and view the art. And at this point, it's a kind of time for networking, meeting people, socializing. We have a wonderful sponsor called The Love of Tea. And Carol Mark owns this company, and she's an amazing feminist activist who used to run a gallery called Art and Social Change, and she's donating tea and baked goods for the socializing aspect. And then Carol Mark will speak about her work with the gallery Art and Social Change as a keynote, and then after that there'll be 5 panel discussions. And the structure of the panel discussions is pretty unique. We didn't put a structure on the conference prior. We wanted it to be non-hierarchical, so we wanted the art to speak to what the panels would be rather than us saying what the panels should be about. So it's a more arduous process, but what we did was look at all the submissions and then see what women artists were speaking about, what's important to them, and then we created the panels around those issues rather than us deciding what the issues should be. So those panels were created, so there'll be 5 panels going on at once, so people will be able to pre-register for those panels. After, there'll be another tea break, so people can speak to the artists again. And then there'll be performance art. So there's 3 performance artists that will be doing performance art, and there'll be a Q&A after each performance. And then the panels will repeat again, so people will be able to choose more than one panel. Then there'll be another tea break, lots of tea and cookies and vegan baked goods. And then we're going to have a kind of reception. So there'll be wine and food, and at this point there'll be a dance company called Limitless Productions will do a performance. Yourself will read poetry. There's 2 spoken word artists that will be performing. Andrea Thompson, who's a really well-known spoken word artist, and Leisha Peel. Wanda Carroll will be, she's a storyteller. She'll be talking about her sexual identity in her 40s and what that's all about. And also Abstract Random, the feminist band will be performing, so we're really excited that they've agreed to come and do that. So it's going to be quite a day, and I think it's going to be very stimulating.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting. Mm-hmm. Exciting.
Did you want to talk a little bit what kind of panels?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm excited to hear what came out of the submissions.
Yeah, so there was 5 themes that developed, and the first panel is called Fertile Ground, Body Politics and Sexuality. So a lot of women were talking about their bodies and the recent attack on the vagina. So I don't know if people have noticed, but in the newspaper and different women's magazines, even on television, they're talking about reconstructing our labia.
Yeah.
Making women's labia as childlike or infant-like by removing the mature aspects of the labia. So there's an artist, Deb Wiles, who made sculptures of women's labia. So she's an amazing artist, and she made 52 of these sculptures. And there's another artist, Kathy Mantes, who's talking about women's fertility issues around childbearing. And Melissa Sky is an amazing filmmaker who did a video called The Clitoris. Clit 101 is what it's called, and it's about educating people about the clitoris. And it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's very political, and it's very interesting. So she'll be talking about that film that she made. We also have Jen Lewis, which is one of our out-of-country artists who's coming from Michigan, and she did these phenomenal photographs of her menstrual blood, and they're quite beautiful, and it's of the menstrual blood dropping into water. And her partner took the photographs. So I'm not sure what the process was. I'm sure we'll hear all about it, but the photos are absolutely beautiful. And you can see them if you go to beautyandblood.com, I believe. That's her website. The second panel is called Creating Our Own Narrative, Responding to Gendered Violence. So a lot of women were talking about rape and domestic violence, and they made artwork that was very visceral and spoke to that. So we gathered those people on a panel together. We have another panel, which Eldeli will be moderating, and it's called Black Exoticism, Fetishization of the Black Female Body. And maybe you can talk a bit about the artists and what they're speaking about in that panel.
So essentially the entire panel is going to be talking about how the black female body has always been fetishized. So whether it's from a construct by the white settler construct, essentially, or Rima. Yeah, so Rima is one of the artists, and she
and
was
it's her birthday today. Happy
yeah.
birthday.
Happy birthday, shout out. Yeah.
And so she is talking about how essentially all bodies have been fetishized. So either as the original women who's been fetishized as the Pocahontas or the Asian women who have been fetishized in the subversive way, and how, you know, the very polite and the nimble finger arguments and all that stuff. So essentially it's just sort of breaking down those stereotypes of sexual fetishization of the female body, but specifically with looking at the black female body.
Mm-hmm. After that, we have a panel called Gender Politics and Social Change Through Art. And this panel is very particularly geared towards the trans artists. We had a lot of trans artists submit work that is amazing, and they're going to be talking about how they address body and gender and sexuality through art. And talking about their work and how they visually speak about that in the images. I think this one is going to be very compelling and provocative. And then the last panel is called Mundane Tasks, and it's about profound statements, feminism, and fabric art. So very interestingly, we have a lot of women that submitted work that is made like quilting, knitting, all these things that are made of fabric. So going back to those, what art history would have called craft arts, the work that women did, the artwork that women did, and reclaiming that, but then using it to speak about social justice. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, Helene Vosters is deconstructing military uniforms. So she's taking them apart thread by thread, and it's a kind of performance piece, and she photographs it, and she has artifacts. And so she's using the fabric and the uniform to literally deconstruct militarism. Mm-hmm. So they're taking those crafts that women, what art history would call craft, but the art that women did in the past, and using that art as a vehicle to talk about social justice. So that panel is also going to be very, well, they're all going to be really interesting. I want to go to all of them, but obviously I can't. We're really excited. So those panels will repeat twice.
That's such a great way of doing it, because often you go to a conference and you have to pick and choose, and it's always such a dilemma, because you don't want to miss something, and you know, but sometimes you have to do that.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that you guys are doing the panels twice.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So people can pick two. You can pick two out of five.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah,
that's great. Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about the fundamentals, just to get into sort of a nitty-gritty of feminism, because I think, you know, for people who haven't really engaged in feminism or any kind of feminist theory, they often think, oh, angry women. And mm-hmm. But, you know, the fact that you're including trans artists, but also, you know, men can be feminists, too.
Absolutely.
So do you guys want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I think it's really important to note that feminism isn't just one trend. There's so many facets to feminism, and there's different feminisms. And I think a lot of people sort of go back into the second wave feminists, and that's sort of what they see if they don't really know about it. So like you said, they'll look at, you know, radical feminism or second wave feminism, which historically was a very exclusionary trend, right? So I mean,
very white.
Exactly, white middle class women, and it was very exclusionary to other feminisms that were created around that time, but didn't have as much exposure. Mm-hmm. So I think for anybody who's sort of starting to dip their feet into feminism, it would be really great for them to sort of look at all the different varieties of feminisms that are around, and realize that feminism really is just trying to look at human rights with a gender lens, but that also means including trans people and people who identify as women without necessarily, you know, fitting into what society deems is a woman, right? So, and I think sort of like sort of stepping away from second wave feminism, because though it has done a lot for us, it still has some destructive aspects to a lot of people as feminists, even like myself. And so I think going into the modern era of feminisms and looking at that would be really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think another really unique aspect to this conference is that we will have multi-generational women artists there. So there were a few things that were important to us. One, that we did a lot of outreach with the call for submissions. So we have youth involved. We have women who are in the second wave involved. We have third wave, fourth wave feminists involved. They're all going to be there. And the second diversity would be that they're multidisciplinary activity going on. So it's painting, photography, spoken word, poetry, literature, installation, music. It's every art form. So we even had some women email us and say, wow, I can't believe you're including literature. I've never been able to present at an art conference mm-hmm. before because I wasn't included in that mm-hmm. Spectrum. And I was like, wow, well, isn't writing art? I thought writing was art. So, yeah, we've been really inclusionary with the arts. So, and even yesterday I was speaking to one of the spoken word artists, and she was saying that spoken word has often been left out of the kind of elitist dialogue of art because it's considered, it's not pure poetry right. or it hasn't been included in the canon of poetry. Mm-hmm. And she said she's chosen spoken word because it's so direct, and she can have a relationship with the audience that you can't have with maybe a book mm-hmm. of poetry. So she was like, I'm so glad the spoken word is included. So we've tried to be very inclusive, and I think that's what's going to make the day really dynamic and unique mm-hmm. is that there's just so many layers to what's being presented.
Yeah, I mean, it's really true to its name in the sense that it's allowing for all creative expression and recognizing all creative expression as art mm-hmm. Or, you know, a vast majority of mediums as art, which, yeah, again, is really, as a spoken word artist, I really appreciate that because there's a hierarchy not only of art, but you know, also who is allowed access to space to present their art,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that's a big problem as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's a feminist issue?
Yeah, definitely, because I approached the whole conference, like my vision from the beginning was non-hierarchical. Like I was very aware of that, and I kept checking myself and making sure that I wasn't going to put any hierarchies. Even though I have a master's in painting and I come from academia, I had to make sure that academic structure didn't come into my choices or mm-hmm. who I was sending calls to. And even when we were curating the show, mm-hmm. I mean, some people would say, well, you know, this isn't contemporary art, or this isn't like, this wouldn't be shown in a gallery. We can't show
exactly.
this. But I was ixnaying that and saying, no, that's not what this is about. This is about including everyone and also recognizing that you can be an artist and not have a master's in painting. Like you can be making art in your home and not have that background and not need to speak in that contemporary art gallery language and still be included in this. So because that's a very hierarchical system and very patriarchal as well. So every aspect, I was trying to break down the hierarchy and be inclusive. So
maybe because your process and your journey to today was such a long one, maybe take the listeners back to, you know, your conception to now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working on a project called the Missing Women Project. And so for the past 3 years, I've been painting missing women from Ontario in an effort to bring awareness to violence against women in our local community. So I find that as a feminist watching the news, particularly in the last few weeks, there's been a lot of hysteria around this rape and murder of this woman in India, which was a terrible situation. But I find the way the media's lens is on it, it's very Eurocentric Western, saying almost in between the words, look at these barbarians, what are they doing to their women? And meanwhile, we have these situations happening in our communities all the time.
And also being perpetrated by our police.
Yeah, being perpetrated by our police. And so what my concept was behind this series was to remind people of the violence against women that's occurring in our local community, mm-hmm. and to bring awareness around these cases. So in my series, there's women from all different aspects of life. There's women who are middle class, women who are sex workers, women who are mentally ill, who are at risk, who are homeless, and showing how violence occurs across those spectrums. It's not just you're living this lifestyle, and so you're more apt to experience violence. It goes across all spectrums. Mm-hmm. But when I was going to have this show, I didn't want to do it without a feminist discourse around it. There needed to be discussion happening and speaking and analysis. It can't just be the work on the walls. It's not enough. So when I started the series, I made a commitment that I would have a feminist discussion around it. And that's how the idea came about, that I would have the Feminist Art Conference. And so I chose the Foundry in particular because it had a gallery and an event space attached to it so that the show and the conference could coexist with each other. So that was the background on that. But also I have presented at feminist conferences, and I was kind of the token artist. And that also inspired me because there isn't an outlet for artists to explore their work in a conference like just artists. So that was another inspiration for it as well. The third inspiration would be that when I have gone to conferences or feminist panels that are more in the academic realm, I find that the issues that they speak about are so abstract and esoteric that they're not dealing with what women are facing in their daily lives. Like it's so in the ivory tower that, you know, yes, you've spent, you know, your PhD writing this paper, but how is it affecting the woman who's on the corner and can't feed her children or is homeless and there's all these budget cuts happening? Like, why are we talking about this stuff? So in the call for submissions, I was very clear in saying that I wanted work that was about what women are experiencing in their everyday life, not abstract things. I wanted real life, visceral things that happen to us that we're trying to deal with from day to day. Mm-hmm. So that was the journey, I guess.
I just want to get back to the Missing Women Project, because I know that you feature women from Ontario between who have gone missing between 1970 and 2000, and I've been meaning to ask you why. That time frame, is there a specific reason why you chose that time frame?
I think there's a lot of missing women, and I was trying to figure out a way to kind of shorten that list and focus. And I chose that time frame because I wanted to talk about forgotten cases, so cases that weren't in people's periphery anymore, that they weren't thinking about or talking about anymore. I feel that maybe somebody that went missing in the 2000s is still kind of in the media somewhat or is being talked about, but this is about what is forgotten or not in the discourse anymore. Mm-hmm. So that was why I chose that time period.
And what do you envision happening along with this particular installation? Is it a dialogue while people are viewing the portraits, or is it a workshop that goes along with it? What is your vision for that?
So I guess that it would be between the viewer and the painting. So when they come, that's very much my visual artist head there. So going into the exhibit, you look at all these paintings of women, and at first you just think they're portraits. But then when you go up to the title, it would say, like, Josie Boutin, missing. So then you realize, oh, it's a painting of a missing woman, and then you can start thinking about, what's happening in our local communities around us to women. And also, I wanted to bring awareness in society at large. So I've done a lot of work trying to get the media out to this so that those cases will be spoken about again and brought out in the news. So hopefully you'll be seeing some stuff this week in the local news about the show. And, you know, a lot of the families have written me letters saying that they're really happy that these cases will be in the paper again and thanking me for bringing, shining a light on the case again, because maybe the media hasn't talked about it in 15 years and they're desperately trying to get media attention. And this was kind of a way in that was unique that, you know, this artist is painting these missing women. It's very unique. And then suddenly it's in the paper again and people are talking about the case and that kind of thing. So that was, you know, my main mission was to bring awareness about those cases. So
I really, we have to go to a quick break, but when we come back, I want to talk about art as a way of not just creating awareness, but creating activism. We spoke with you on Indigenous Waves about this issue, about the Missing Women Project, along with Christy Belcourt, who has a really incredible collective installation, creating vamps, moccasin vamps, to represent missing women as well, missing and murdered women. And I just think there's something really powerful about art as activism. So we're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, we will continue the dialogue with Eileen Sova and Aldili on the Feminist Art Conference. And you're listening to The Vibe Collective on CAUT. We'll be back after this very brief message.
From the roots up. CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
And we're back on the Vibe Collective, CIUT 89.5 FM. And I am one of your co-hosts, Jams, and joining me in studio, my co-host. I'm trying to figure out who I am here. Melinda's just laughing.
Mally, a.k.a. Docu Vixen.
And Adnan Hussein. I think I'm going like Quasimodo mad from the bells. You know, they're just like...
Yeah, I know. What's going on? Yeah. I don't know.
It's like practice day for Baba Black Sheep or something.
Yeah. So for the listeners who've been hearing sort of weird background noise, that's the bells on campus at Hart House. I don't know why. They don't normally happen at this time.
Maybe a wedding?
I don't know. Man, what is the royal wedding?
There's like weddings all around here. If you just walk around Hart House, there's like two
at least.
There's
always weddings. It's true. I don't know. So anyways, we'll try not to pay too much attention to that, because the content of this discussion is hopefully more interesting than the bells. We're speaking with Eileen Sova and Aldili of the Feminist Arts Conference, which is taking place March 9th. Saturday, March 9th, and it starts at noon, yes?
Yes.
And it goes until 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. at the Foundry on Bathurst. Mm-hmm. And right before the break, did you have something you wanted to say, Adnan?
I had a question. It's just that normally when we, I suppose when you're thinking about feminism in sort of an academic mode, it's always feminism as a response specifically to patriarchy. And that's why it's sort of men and everyone else who's an other can kind of get included, because it's specifically speaking back to patriarchy. But I noticed that neither of you said the word patriarchy during any point in which you introduced this. And I think that's something quite interesting and quite telling at the same time, because it's this is more a celebration of women in this sort of very multifaceted engagement. And I find that's really beautiful. And the thing that really kind of hit me was your challenge to not do it in a hierarchical fashion. Because I whenever I get involved in doing a conference, if I'm doing it on post-colonial studies or something like that, and which has meant to have a non-hierarchical approach, we still do the call. We're like, your papers will be on these issues and you will submit on these topics. We will structure it in this fashion. And I think what you've done is amazing, because it proves it can be done. And that in and of itself is something to be celebrated. So awesome. And I was wondering if you could speak to maybe why you didn't want to speak to patriarchy.
I think it's obvious. I don't know. I think I did say the word patriarchy I'm going to correct you, because when I was talking about the galleries, I said that the gallery structure is very patriarchal. But yeah, I guess to me, I feel like it's very obvious that we're in this white supremacist patriarchal framework. So I'll say that for sure, especially with art, if you compare numbers, visual artists in particular, because that's my discipline, I can speak to only 1 in 10 women who go to art school become artists, whereas statistically they outnumber men in art school by 10 to 1. So the statistics are quite alarming. And even if you were to go to Art Toronto, like the big art festival, or if you were to go to our museums, the AGO or MoCA, or if you were to just go up and down the gallery strip and to count the gendered shows, you would see a massive disparity between men and women being shown. And in some ways, you would think art would be the more progressive realm, but it's still only 10% of women being shown in galleries and museums, and 90% men. And I've talked to collectors and dealers about that, and they said, well, the wealthy people want to invest in male art because it will be worth something, whereas female art won't be worth something. Like, their money won't be returned. This is the main reason why the galleries will choose a male artist over a female artist, because they need to
sell. I guess they've never heard
of Frida Kahlo. They need to sell. But even with the Frida Kahlo show, I was quite disappointed, because when I was walking through, I don't know if you noticed this, but it said one of the world's most famous women artists. And I thought, why did they need to say women artists? She's one of the most famous artists in the world. Yeah. And she's much more recognizable and famous than her partner, Diego. Yeah. And yet they still needed to say she was the most famous woman artist. And I was just really disappointed with that. So having a feminist art conference is a kind of way, like a lot of the women wrote me, they can't show their work. Who's going to show some of these topics? Who's going to buy some of these topics? But these women are committed to be passionate about feminism and to make their art about it, even though it might not sell. Mm-hmm. And they're just so excited that they now have a venue. So I think even us doing this is breaking down that patriarchy, because they have a wall to put their work on. Yeah. It's as simple as that. Or a venue to dance in, or to say their poetry in.
Yeah, and it sort of avoids the allowing the market to dictate what gets shown as well. And that's, I mean, that's an intervention necessary against this kind of predatory capitalism, which we all struggle against.
Yeah. I want to get back to what we were talking about before the break, which is art as activism. And I referenced, you know, your project, the Missing Women's Project, and Christy Belcourt's Walking with Our Sisters. But not just those projects. I mean, a lot of the art that you're describing that will be featured in the Feminist Art Conference is activist based. There's a message. There's. Mm-hmm. Do you think that that's a natural relationship between art and social consciousness, or do you think it's something that, as female artists, because you know there are all of these layers, especially female artists of color, do you think that that is? I'm trying to think of what the question I want to ask. Is it a natural sort of progression to use art as activism?
Well, I think in terms of using art as activism, I think both of them just go really well hand in hand together. And I guess just speaking, like as a young person, I think one of the things that first attracted me to the Feminist Art Conference was that it was an art conference. I've been to many conferences before that were feminist, but either politically or academically based, and I haven't really ever encountered one like this. And I think it really speaks to sort of an intergenerational knowledge that everybody could gather from each other, because art is so intergenerational to begin with. And so is activism. So both of those go totally hand in hand together. And I think in terms of creative activism, to me, it's one of the most interesting but also really powerful ways of doing activism, because I think also going back to like the stereotypes of activists are, you know, people who are angry and they're protesting God knows what, and, you know, they're just sort of a bother on society as opposed to creating change, which is what, you know, activism is. And so in terms of creative activism, what I think is really amazing when you use art is that you sort of you link it to other people, and you link it and you make it personable, so that everybody can sort of connect on the artistic level, but as well as getting the messages of activism and sort of getting sort of their activist 101 through art, which I think is really key.
Yeah, definitely. It makes me think of Idle No More. One of the founders, Sylvia McAdam, always references the fact that it started as a creative movement, and that's what allowed it to spur, is that, you know, people were gathering to round dance, and there were spoken word artists, and there were, you know, it wasn't just people with a megaphone yelling. That was part of it as well, but it was really important that it is a creative movement. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think also above all that activism can be positive and it can be a happy instance, which I think also a lot of people don't really recognize that as being, you know, something that can be equal to happiness and
love.
Yeah.
And a celebration,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Rather than just being angry again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think also like art itself is creation, right? So you're coming from a space where you're creating something totally new. So I think it's the best way to sort of reconstruct what we want to create, mm-hmm. On a broader societal level, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so let me just I'm trying to find the... There we go. Okay, so once again, the Feminist Art Conference happening March 9th includes panel discussions on the fertile ground, body politics and sexuality, black exoticism, fetishization of the black female body, gender politics and social change through art making. So that's kind of what we were talking about in terms of, you know, having the intersection of art and social change and social activism. Mundane Tasks, Profound Statements, Feminism and Fabric Arts, and Creating Our Own Narrative, Responding to Gendered Violence. Were there some subjects that you wanted to be able to include, but you couldn't because there's only so much time? I mean, there's a lot to talk about in feminist art.
No, I think that we... Like I said, I wanted to start from a place where I put the call out and I said, you know, my only parameter was things that affect women in their everyday lives. I think we said things of particular interest are, and we had a list like slut shaming, fertility rights or abortion rights, economic and political agency, gendered violence, transgender issues. Those were like kind of the list, but it was so broad, and everyone keeps saying to me, your call was so broad, and I'm like, really? I thought it was specific. No, it was very broad, and I think that it was we got everything that we wanted. It was wonderful. When we were opening the email every day, it was like Christmas. I was like, oh my God, look at this. We were shooting them back and forth, like the curatorial team, and looking at them. It was just phenomenal. And we had such a huge response. I think we got over 70 proposals. And we ended up with about 50 artists. And most of the people, we didn't reject anyone because of their art. It was because they applied from New York City or Vancouver or Montreal, and we couldn't accommodate them we couldn't pay for that. We didn't have the budget to pay for them to come. That was the reasons that we couldn't do it. So we're just thinking future, like next year we can apply for funding and be able to bring traveling artists and all of that, because that was the only reason that we rejected anyone. But I was quite shocked at the response and how far and wide they came from. Mm-hmm. We do have an artist from Minnesota coming as well, who her name's Gudrun Locke, and she does these amazing installations where she creates a woman out of cloth, like a life-size woman, and she puts them into like the street or in stores, and they're kind of, they look very anonymous, and they have babies or they're pregnant or but they have no face. They're very interesting. Mm-hmm. And she applied for funding from her university, and her university's paying for her to come to FACS. So, oh. Yeah, so she was able to come because she garnered funding. If anybody wants to see, we launched our virtual gallery yesterday. We're very excited about it. So if you go to www.factoronto.org, so factoronto.org, and you can see participating artists, if you click on that header, the whole entire gallery of artists is there, and you can also click on their websites and explore their work further. So it's quite an extensive gallery. And I have to thank Maureen and Dana for spending the past 2 weeks building it in WordPress, which can be finicky. So they were amazing, and they got it all up, and it's up there now. So you can go and take a look at all the stuff that we're talking about if you want to see the visuals. Yeah.
One of the other things I wanted to ask about, just, you know, because I do think it's a feminist issue, but I'm wondering what your thoughts are on it, is how do we negotiate the gender binary when talking about feminist issues?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something that I've always sort of grappled on. And to me, just the idea of a gender binary, I guess, with the feminist theories that I've gotten to know through school and through just, you know, general life experience and stuff like that, have always deconstructed the gender binary. And so I think for us it was really important to ensure that anybody who didn't necessarily see themselves in that binary was still included and was still able to participate. Because, you know, we wanted to make sure that the movement was as inclusive as possible, because that is the point of the Feminist Art Conference, is to include it to anybody who considers themselves a feminist, whether you believe to be on the binary or not. And so I think sort of balancing that can be a challenge sometimes, but I think in terms of just having an open mind and realizing that maybe something that you're so used to naturalizing in terms of, you know, gender binaries, that it's not necessarily the same thing for everybody, and just to understand that, you know, identities are so personal and every single person identifies individually, personally. So I think that is just important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And again, it goes back to the fact that a feminist doesn't mean being a female. It
exactly.
doesn't mean being feminine. It just means having a consciousness of the social struggles of female-identified bodies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you have something you wanted to say?
Not particularly, but actually that last comment was making me think about, like, I find often... that there's a category of people that feel excluded from the conversation of feminism, and it's not necessarily men, but I found in my experience to be religious Muslim women, like frequently ones who would at least cover. And the issue for them is they feel that feminism so frequently is an intervention that targets them and their decisions in a way which kind of is unfair, or they feel is unfair.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just... I was just thinking on that when we were discussing that last little bit about how they don't feel included in the conversation of feminism. But in many ways, like feminism in that sort of this wave of feminism, it speaks to them as well. It's not about exclusion. You know, like we had bell hooks' criticism. We know that that like white middle class urban women like don't
yeah.
speak for everybody. So. Yeah, and I wish they would that at least my students who are afraid to go to things like this would make that effort, because I think they would be eye opening. I would love to drag some of them there, but I
well,
can't.
You should. Well, you should at least, you could make it like an assignment.
Yeah,
I had profs assign conferences.
That's brilliant.
That's
all
a
right.
good idea.
Yeah. Monday, pitching it in class. Done.
Yeah, and it's pay what you can at the door. That's also about being inclusive. So.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have a registration fee. You just register. You can register on the website as well. So there's a button that says register. And we want everyone to register so that they can pick the panels. So make sure you register. I'm just noticing this morning that there's, I think, 81 people attending on Facebook, but only 70 registered. So make sure that you register. And then you will be able to pick your panel and be prepared for the day. But yeah, invite your students because it's pay what you can, and anyone can come if you can't afford it. You can walk in for free, and there'll be cookies and tea and food and wine. So yeah, so that's, again, part of our inclusivity commitment.
I just want to welcome to the studio one of our Vibe Collective co-hosts, who was volunteering at another space and was unable to get here right at 3, but has arrived now, so I want to let everyone know that she's here. Kemba King, welcome.
Hello, everybody. I took transit again today, and I'm reminded why I am not for transit, but I'm happy to be here. And I hate that Facebook thing where you have all these people going, but mm-hmm. then that's a real
yeah.
challenge.
I used to work in events, and they said that you... You can expect that one third will not show up. It's the golden yeah. rule of event planning. But yeah. with Facebook, it's 50%.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because people just click it and they forget, and mm-hmm. yeah, they don't show up. So,
yeah, yeah, that's really frustrating.
Mm-hmm. It's the same like mouse click activism as well.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just trying to line something up here, but we've got about 10 minutes left in the discussion. Do you want to talk maybe a little bit about what the process was? You mentioned that you know you had to weed some people out because you couldn't afford to bring them here, but was it really hard to pick and choose with the rest of the people? You got quite overwhelmed with the response mm-hmm, and submissions. Mm-hmm. So how do you go about rejecting somebody? I know that would be really hard to do.
Well, yeah, I think the only reason we rejected anyone was because of logistics. And when we wrote the letter, we were really sensitive to that with the language we used. So it said something like, this is not a evaluation on your work. It's only because of practical reasons or logistics that we can't accommodate you. We really want you to come. We think it'd be an amazing event for you to network. And, you know, this is the registration link, that kind of thing. And a lot of people wrote us back right away and said, thank you so much. And it was such a great process, and I'm going to come. And, yeah, we got really positive responses from that letter. And just in terms of, like, the non-hierarchical framework within our groups, like, we have a graphics group, and we have a curatorial group, and we have a press group. We're constantly checking with each other and using consensus. So with that letter, even we sent the letter to the whole curatorial team. They had to approve that letter, the rejection letter, and say that they were okay with it or edit it, send it back until we were happy with it as a group, and then send it out. So we're trying to use all these methods at every stage and every aspect of it.
You know, I had all kinds of questions and things I wanted to say, but I'm sure they've been discussed already. But talking about the consensus model, I know that's something within the space that I used to work, the Center for Women and Trans People at York U, it was something that was employed. And in other organizations that I've been a part of, I want to know how it works for your organization, because for me, I know there's opportunities within it for me.
There's opportunities?
Like, that's my polite way of saying I don't like it.
It's hard. It's very hard. Like, they always say, like, democracy is messy. You know, it's not easy. It's almost easier to have that dictator who's saying, no, this. But I think maybe because we're all coming from feminism and an artistic background, I've found the process has been pretty easy so
yeah,
far.
Yeah, I think actually maybe the thing that was the most time-consuming was actually having everybody responding to consensus building, because mm-hmm. so many of us are busy with
yeah,
so many
busy
other projects
yeah.
that just not the idea of coming to a consensus was a problem, it's just having the time of everybody consenting to something. So that to me, I think, was probably the only main issue.
Yeah.
And I guess acknowledging the fact that consensus building is a practical way of connecting to our indigenous ways of making decisions, mm-hmm. and that the alternative hierarchical model is a very Western capitalist way, and mm-hmm. I understand that that's work that I'm doing.
Mm. Yeah,
but it also happens when, as a cultural shift, it's when there's this kind of language that enters into it with things like the Arab Spring and mm-hmm. other democratic uprisings. Is people like, well, why can't they get it right? And the issue is that it's a learned culture, it's a learned habit. Democratization and the culture of sort of people owning their mm-hmm. rights mm-hmm. is something that takes time. And if you have like in the case of Pakistan, which I work on, like we have this culture of every 7 to 11 years having a dictator. And so if you interrupt the system, then it doesn't develop. That's like, so yeah. It's this constantly aborted process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm. One thing we're working on tomorrow, which is really important to us, is a vision for the conference. So a vision statement that will be read at the beginning of the day to kind of create a tone for how we want people to interact and be respectful and to be understanding of where everyone's coming from. And so this, I think, is going to be one of the hardest tasks, is writing this paragraph and being really cognizant of language and inclusivity there. So we've asked for everyone in the group to send us what they would like it to say. And then we're going to sit down and deconstruct it, put everything into one paragraph, and then send it back out, get everybody's feedback until it's where we want it to be. And then that will be read at the beginning of the day to kind of create a vibe collective.
We'll let you use it. How many people do you have working on the conference?
15 on the committee, and they all volunteered. They all wrote me and said, I want to help. This is amazing. I had another woman email me last night at 2 a.m. I want to help with this. Please let me. Yeah. And, the team is unbelievably talented, and I'm just really, really thankful to everyone who's come forward. We have, if you go on the website, you can see the committee, and you can click on the websites of all the women that are helping, and it's just the work they've done is so inspiring.
Can you give the website again for the listeners?
So it's factoronto.org, so factoronto.org.
And in addition to listing the committee, you have the virtual gallery on there. You have mm-hmm. participating artists, partners. Were you able to get many sponsors for this?
Well, the Creative Blueprint Gallery and the Foundry are organizers in the way that they're giving us certain breaks on the costing, and because the owner of the Foundry and the owner of Creative Blueprint are very social justice minded people, and they really believe in the conference, and they were so excited that we wanted to have it there because it's part of their mandate to have social justice focused events in that space. So they've been generous with us in terms of our contract and the use of the space. And then we have this wonderful woman, Carol Mark, who is donating the tea and the baked goods for during the day. Also, Kelly Lannon, who's a chef, is going to create the food platters at the end of the night. She's donating her time to do that. So a lot of it's donation and volunteer work to make it happen. And yeah, we're super, super thankful to everybody because the amount of hours and expertise and talent that's gone into it so far is phenomenal.
I'm really looking forward to this event. It's going to be exciting. And I think just the energy of having, you know, all of these artists coming together, all of these feminist artists bringing different perspectives of what feminist activism is, especially in art, it's just going to be really exciting. So I want to thank you both for coming in today to talk to us. And Eileen, thank you so much for doing this conference, or for thinking of this conference, and then for bringing everybody together to make it happen. It's exciting.
Thank you for having us in here to promote it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks so much. So hopefully people will register and come, because I think it's going to be really inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So once again, you want them to pre-register on the website.
Yeah, there's a link to an eBrite software. It's this amazing software for conferences. I think a lot of people have probably seen it already. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be able to email you information a lot easier, and it's just really it's convenient.
Okay, yeah. So we just tweeted the website out. So hopefully people who follow us on Twitter at The Vibe Collective can check that out. And you also have a Facebook group.
Yeah, our Facebook group is just Feminist Art Conference. We're the only feminist art conference in Facebook. So that's what comes up. And also at Toronto FAC is our Twitter, and our hashtag is FACTO.
Fantastic. So once again, Eileen Sova and Eldili, thank you so much, both of you, for coming through to the Vibe Collective today.
Thanks so much.
It's been really, really illuminating talking to you about feminist art.